There's this moment of cognitive dissonance that happens. It happens whenever you travel across the border, or honestly, even if you just scroll through social media. You look at the price tag of a prescription drug in the United States.
Something vital.
Yeah, something vital like insulin or new cancer therapy. And then you look at the exact same box, same manufacturer, same molecule here in Canada.
And the difference just makes your jaw drop.
It's staggering. And for years, we've sort of patted ourselves on the back about this.
Oh, absolutely.
We frame it as a victory, right? A triumph of our healthcare system's negotiating power. But we're looking at a policy brief today that suggests this so-called victory might actually be a ticking time bomb.
It's definitely a wake-up call. We are diving into a brief from the Canadian Health Policy Journal, published just this month, February 2026.
Very recent.
Very. It's titled, "Does Canada Pay Its Fair Share of the Global Cost of Pharmaceutical Innovation?" by a Dr. Brett Skinner. And, well, the core argument is uncomfortable. Skinner suggests that Canada isn't just getting a good deal. He argues we are effectively free riding.
Free riding.
Free riding on a global innovation system that is, for the most part, being subsidized almost entirely by American patients.
That's a heavy term, free riding. It implies we aren't pulling our weight.
It does. And
Got
what makes this deep dive so urgent isn't just the economic theory, it's the fact that the subsidy, as he calls it, is about to be cut off.
Right. So this isn't just academic anymore. There's a very specific political trigger involved here.
Exactly.
Before we get into the fair share math, let's set the stage with a catalyst. What happened back in May 2025?
The United States, well, they finally snapped. In May 2025, the U.S. President issued Executive Order 14297.
Okay.
It's titled, "Delivering Most Favored Nation Prescription Drug Pricing to American Patients."
Most favored nation. That sounds like trade war terminology.
It
Usually you hear that about like tariffs on steel or aluminum, not pharmaceuticals.
And that's exactly how you should see it. It's a trade weapon. The MFN policy is essentially a rule.
A rule that does what?
It forces pharmaceutical manufacturers to list their drugs in the United States at the lowest price found among a group of reference countries. Basically, the U.S. looked at the prices in Canada, Europe, Japan, and said, "We want that price too."
So wait, if a company sells a breakthrough heart medication to Canada for, say, $10, they legally cannot turn around and sell it to Americans for $100 anymore.
Correct. Not anymore. And if they don't comply,
What attitude?
they face massive tariffs or they get locked out of the U.S. market entirely. The rationale written right into the order is fascinating. It explicitly says, and I'm quoting here, "Inflated prices in the United States fuel global innovation while foreign health systems get a free ride."
Wow. That is the U.S. government effectively saying, we are done subsidizing the world's medicine.
That's it. And this fundamentally breaks the business model of the entire pharmaceutical industry.
Because if the U.S. price drops to match Canada's.
Then the global revenue that funds research and development just poof, evaporates.
Okay, hold on. I have to play devil's advocate for a second. Skinner calls it free riding, the U.S. calls it subsidizing. But isn't this just smart negotiation on Canada's part? I mean, if I go to a car dealership and I haggle a better price than the guy who walked in before me, I'm not a free rider. I'm just a savvy customer. So why is this different?
That is the intuitive pushback, right? Why should we voluntarily pay more? But the car dealership analogy, it doesn't quite work here because of the unique economics of drug development. We need to talk about something called Ramsey pricing.
Ramsey pricing. Okay. Sounds like a concept from an Econ 101 textbook.
It is, but it perfectly explains why the current system exists. Think of the pharmaceutical market like a commercial flight. You have your business class passengers and you have your economy passengers.
Okay, I'm with you. And the U.S. is business class.
Yes. The cost to actually fly the plane, the fuel, the pilots, the R&D on the jet engines, that's massive.
Those are the fixed costs.
Right. In pharma, this is the billions spent on R&D, clinical trials, all the failed experiments.
So whether you have one passenger or 100, the plane costs the same to fly.
Exactly. Now, the business class passengers, the US, they pay a premium. That high ticket price covers the bulk of the fuel and the pilot's salary.
Got it.
And because those big fixed costs are covered, the airline can now afford to sell the remaining seats in economy to Canada, France, Germany at a much lower price.
Maybe just enough to cover the peanuts in the baggage handling.
Precisely. The marginal cost. That's Ramsey pricing. You charge different prices based on what the market can bear. It lets the plane fly full.
But here's the problem.
What's that?
Canada, sitting in economy, is looking through the curtain at business class and saying, hey, why is his ticket $5,000 and mine is only $500? That's not fair.
And now, with this new executive order, the business class passenger, the U.S., is turning around and saying, you know what? I'm not paying $5,000 anymore. I'm paying $500, just like the guy in 23B.
And if everyone pays $500,
the airline goes bankrupt. Yep. The plane doesn't fly.
That's the free rider problem.
That's it. Skinner argues that Canada has the ability to pay for a business class ticket. We're a wealthy G7 nation, but we use our regulations to force our way into an economy seat.
So we aren't the broke student getting a discount.
Yeah.
We're the millionaire using a fake student ID to get cheap movie tickets.
That is a very, very accurate way to put it. And Skinner didn't just rely on theory. He brought the receipts. He analyzed IQVIA data to calculate exactly how much of a free ride Canada is taking.
Okay, let's get into those numbers. Because fair share is such a subjective term, how does he define it mathematically?
He defines fair share in a very egalitarian way for this analysis. Basically, if everyone just paid the average price across wealthy nations, what would Canada's bill be?
Simple enough.
He looked at 87 top-selling new active substances. So patented drugs sold in both Canada and the U.S. back in 2020.
What was the verdict?
Of those 87 drugs, 81 of them.
The vast majority.
Were priced lower in Canada than the average of the reference countries.
So we are systematically paying less.
Much less. In 2020, for just those 87 drugs, Canada paid about $6.7 billion U.S. dollars. But if Canada had paid the average price, its fair share, the bill would have been $15.5 billion.
Whoa. So we paid less than half of the average global price.
Correct. Skinner calculates that Canada's fair share was about 230% of what we actually paid. The dollar value of that free ride just for those drugs in that 1 year was roughly $8.7 billion USD.
That is nearly $9 billion of R&D funding that Canada effectively just opted out of.
And it gets staggering when you extrapolate it to today. If you apply that same math to the entire Canadian market for patented medicines in 2023, Skinner estimates that Canada underpaid by anywhere from $13 billion to $26 billion Canadian dollars.
Up to $26 billion.
Yeah.
In a single year. That's the size of the subsidy the U.S. market is providing to our healthcare system.
It really highlights the vulnerability, doesn't it? We've built our budget assumptions on the idea that the U.S. will always overpay.
And that assumption is now dead.
If that executive order holds, yes.
Now, you mentioned earlier that we use regulations to get these prices. And I know if you follow Canadian Pharma News, the acronym PMPRB comes up all the time. But Skinner seems to imply the game is, well, rigged.
Rigged is a strong word, but engineered is definitely accurate. Canada has a multi-layered bureaucratic machine designed to drive prices down. Layer one is the PMPRB.
The Patented Medicine Prices Review Board. These are the folks who set the price ceiling, right?
Yes. They set the maximum allowable price. But here's the trick. To decide what's excessive, they look at a basket of other countries. It's called the PMPRB11.
Let me guess. The United States isn't in that basket.
They are not. Neither is Switzerland.
The two most expensive markets.
Exactly. By excluding the two countries with the highest market-driven prices, the average just plummets. It's like calculating the average height of a basketball team, but kicking out the two tallest players first.
The average suddenly looks a lot shorter. That is clever. Bureaucratically impressive, but I can see why the U.S. is annoyed.
And that's just layer one. Layer two is the HTA Health Technology Assessment.
Okay.
Agencies like Canada's drug agency, the CDA, they look at a drug and ask, is this cost effective? And if the answer is no, they don't recommend it for public funding.
Which gives the provinces huge leverage. Lower your price or we won't buy it at all.
Exactly. And then comes the heavy hitter, monopsony negotiation.
Monopsony. The opposite of a monopoly. One buyer.
Right. In Canada, all the provinces band together to form the Pan-Canadian Pharmaceutical Alliance, a PCPA.
So they negotiate is one massive block.
One massive block. It's like Costco negotiation on steroids.
Right.
We are buying for 40 million people. Give us a deal.
And I assume it works.
Incredibly well. Skinner notes this negotiation layer often extracts rebates of around 48% off the list price.
48%.
Yeah, so even that low ceiling set by the PMPRB, the actual price paid is often half of that.
Okay, so we've established Canada's getting a screaming deal. We're flying economy for pennies while the U.S. pays for the jet fuel. But the warning here, the one from Skinner, is that this isn't just about money. There's a lag effect. If you starve the system of revenue today, you aren't just cutting profits, you're cutting the fuel for the next cycle of innovation.
That is the critical pivot in the brief. The so what isn't about pharmaceutical stock prices, it's about human life. Skinner brings in data from an economist, Frank Lichtenberg, to quantify what that innovation is worth to us.
Because I think people forget that innovation means better drugs. It's not abstract.
It is not abstract at all. Lichtenberg analyzed new drugs approved between 1970 and 2022. The data shows that pharmaceutical innovation saved 847,000 Canadian life years in that period.
Nearly a million life years.
And without those specific new drugs, the number of life years lost before age 75 would have been 49% higher.
That's a massive impact on mortality. But he also makes an economic argument about hospitals, right?
Yes, this is the offset effect. Better drugs keep people out of the hospital. The data shows these innovations saved 14.2 million hospital days.
14 million.
And in 2022 alone, drug innovation from previous decades reduced hospital expenditures by 78.7 billion Canadian dollars.
Wait, 78.7 billion? That seems enormous.
It is. In fact, it's double the amount Canada spent on all prescribed medicines that year.
So for every dollar we spend on these innovative drugs, the system saves $2 in hospital costs.
That's the argument.
So the irony is, by squeezing drug companies so hard to save, say, $10 billion on the drug budget, we might be costing ourselves $50 billion in hospital stays down the road.
Because the new cures don't get made, that is the risk. If the U.S. MFN policy forces prices down globally, the R&D pot shrinks. There's a direct correlation. Less money means fewer shots on goal.
There is another concept in the brief I want to clarify because it relates to how we value these drugs. We talked about the HTA deciding if a drug is cost-effective.
Mm-hmm.
How do they actually decide that?
They use a metric called the QALY, the quality-adjusted life year.
Right.
It's a way to measure the value of health outcomes. And roughly speaking, Canadian agencies have historically used a threshold of about $50,000 per QALY.
So if a new drug gives you one extra year of perfect health, but it costs $55,000, the spreadsheet says, too expensive, not worth it.
Basically, yes. And Skinner's argument is that this threshold is completely outdated and artificially low.
It does seem low. I mean, average income is higher than that.
Well, look at what happened during the COVID-19 pandemic. Governments shut down entire economies. They spent hundreds of billions of dollars to save lives. If you do the math on that spending, society clearly values a life year at way, way more than $50,000.
That's a great point. We spent millions per life saved during the pandemic. So keeping the threshold at 50K for a new cancer drug seems inconsistent.
Skinner argues we need to raise that threshold to reflect reality. If we say we value life, we should be willing to pay for the innovation that extends it.
So where does this leave us? The U.S. is closing a loophole with their executive order. The free ride is ending. What are our options? Skinner outlines a few paths forward.
He starts with what he calls the radical option. Repeal it all. Scrap the PMPRB mandates. Dissolve the monopsony power of the PCCA. And just let the free market dictate drug prices in Canada.
Okay, politically, that is a complete non-starter. No government is going to run on a platform of, we're going to double your drug prices tomorrow.
Exactly. Skinner acknowledges that. It's the economic ideal, but politically impossible. So he proposes a compromise path.
And what does the compromise look like?
First, fix the bucket. Reintroduce the United States and Switzerland into the reference group for the PMPRB.
So stop ignoring the tall players. This would automatically raise the ceiling price for drugs in Canada.
Right. It would bring our fair share closer to reality. It effectively accepts that we need to pay more to keep the global system running, but in exchange for paying more.
We should get something back.
We should get faster access.
This is the part that matters for patients waiting for treatment.
Currently, there is a huge lag time. Health Canada says a drug is safe, but then you wait months, sometimes years, for price negotiations to finish before the province actually pays for it.
So
Skinner suggests we need to list new drugs on public formularies immediately after health safety approval.
So pay for it while you negotiate the final price.
Exactly. He points to a really promising pilot program in Ontario called FAST.
Funding accelerated for specific treatments. I remember reading about that. Launched back in 2025.
Yes. It was for certain cancer drugs. The government agrees to pay for the drug immediately so patients get it now, and they settle the final price negotiation later. Skinner thinks we need to roll that out nationally.
That seems like a genuine win-win. We pay a bit more, yes, but we stop holding patients hostage during the negotiation process.
It creates a system that is sustainable but also humane.
This has been a lot to unpack. We started with you know, the simple annoyance of price disparities, and ended up realizing those disparities are the structural beams holding up the roof of modern medicine.
It really forces a difficult conversation. We are currently benefiting from a system where the U.S. acts as the global venture capitalist for health.
Right.
They
so.
Take the risk, they pay the high prices, and we get the dividends.
But the venture capitalist is tired of paying the bill.
The executive order is the signal that the tap is closing. Skinner ends the brief with a very provocative thought. He says the United States' lack of price controls is a virtue, not a flaw.
That flies in the face of everything we usually hear in Canadian media.
It does. But he's asking us to look at the results. If every country paid the Canadian price, if everyone flew economy, would those 847,000 life years have been saved? Would the drugs that save millions of hospital days even exist?
Or is the current system, unfair as it seems, the only reason we have them?
Precisely. The free lunch is over. We have to decide if we want cheap drugs today or cures for our children tomorrow.
That is a sobering thought to leave on, but definitely one worth chewing on the next time you look at a pharmacy receipt. Thanks for walking us through this one.
Always a pleasure.
And to our listeners, thanks for diving deep. We'll see you next time.